Welcome to Horse First with Lockie Phillips, a podcast about paying closer attention to the horse, to the work that we do with horses, and paying attention to what's actually happening in front of us. Not what looks good, not what we've been told looks good, because sometimes we slow down and sometimes we speed up, but we don't pretend. I'm Lockie Phillips. Let's begin. Most people think that dangerous horses are disobedient horses, that when a horse disobeys you or doesn't do what you ask them to do, that somehow you are in danger in that situation, or that something is going really wrong with your training when the horse is disobedient. Sometimes that might be the case, but I think most people believe most of the time that disobedience from a horse is a bad thing for them and for the horse. However, I think that some of the most dangerous horses in the world are actually the obedient ones. Not because obedience is inherently bad, but because not teaching cooperation is dangerous. And I think there's a difference to be made between obedience and cooperation. There's a very important difference between a horse who is cooperating with us and a horse who has run out of options and does what we ask them to do. And the horse who has run out of options can become incredibly dangerous. I've lived this over and over. These horses are not necessarily dangerous today. They might not be dangerous tomorrow, but eventually, every living thing needs an exit strategy. Every living being needs a way out of what they are in. All of us. Every living being needs a way to express disagreement without that necessarily derailing productivity and without that necessarily being a contract to the trainer getting everything that they want all the time. I believe every living being needs some sort of mechanism for saying no thank you. And the problem is that a lot of traditional horsemanship has treated that word as something to eliminate. It's treated disobedience as something to eliminate. Behavior problems are basically behavior where you're not getting what you want. What if we treated obedience as a behavior problem? We spend years teaching horses not to question us, not to hesitate, not to disagree, not to challenge and not to resist us. And then we might be surprised when the horse eventually expresses all of their hesitation, disagreement, challenge, and resistance at once, usually at 100 miles an hour and usually out of the blue, and usually in ways that nobody enjoys, and usually in ways that everyone describes as out of the blue, as unexpected. But was it really unexpected? Or was it just delayed? So let's start with something simple so that we can tie this to practical reality. Imagine somebody asks you to do something, such as get up off the sofa and do 10 minutes on a treadmill. And you don't really want to do it because you're in the middle of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and it's about to get really juicy. Or you're in the middle of a bowl of popcorn and your nervous system is in rest digest and isn't really in it right now for a treadmill. So you're not convinced and you might even have concerns about the way you were asked. Maybe they were confusing when they asked. Maybe they were disproportionate with their intensity when they asked you to get up and go to the treadmill. And they then insist, and they don't take no for an answer. So you get up and you do it. The next day, the same thing happens. The next day, the same thing happens. And then the next day, the same thing happens. This goes on for a week, 2 weeks, for 2 months, for 2 years, for 2 decades. What I've experienced is that eventually one of two things will happen for this horse, this being, because this is going to be true for us also. Eventually, you will stop caring about the activity you're doing at all. Or you will explode. Or both. Human beings would respond this way to the same scenario. Children would respond this way to the same scenario. Employees respond this way to this scenario. Spouses also will respond this way to this scenario, and horses will do it too. To be mammal is to be mammal is to be mammal. The difference is that horses don't have as many ways to communicate the problem as we do. And even then, when we speak the same human language, it is challenging enough in this situation for the one who is being pressed upon to be heard, to be seen, to regain control over their person and their life. But horses can't write emails. They can't call a couple's therapist. They can't call their friends and they vent. They can't call a human relations manager at a job and have an intervention that's professional. Horses communicate through what they do, not only through what they do, but how they feel during what they do, which means their behavior becomes information. And if we've got some empathy, we'll be able to tap into the impact of what we're doing and what that means for them. And when we punish, suppress, or eliminate every form of information that the horse offers us, eventually the horse has nothing left except action. And when horses realize that they've got 1,000 pounds on us, double the legs and rocks for feet, and that they have nothing left except action, this is when people and horses get seriously hurt. So I think pure obedience training is a behavior problem that leads to dangerous outcomes eventually. One of the most useful questions I've ever learned to ask of training is, what happens when the horse doesn't want to do this right now? Many of us have also begun to ask this question. But those of us who aren't asking this question will often ask instead, how do I get the horse to do what I want? How do I get the horse, make the horse, have the horse do X, Y, or Z? It's a very different question to ask. How do I get the horse to do this versus what happens if the horse doesn't want to do this? What happens if the horse doesn't want to load? What happens if the horse doesn't want to be caught? What happens if the horse doesn't want the injection? What happens if the horse doesn't want to leave their herd? What happens if the horse doesn't want to stand still? Most training systems tend to answer the question in the same way. You make the horse do it anyway, and sometimes that works. For a while, but there is a hidden cost, because the horse will learn something else. They will learn that my opinion is irrelevant most of the time. And once the horse learns that, one of two things will follow. The horse shuts down or they become explosive. They're left with very little options. And neither outcome is particularly desirable, and neither of them is particularly cooperative. Now, I don't say that there are situations where I say to a horse through my actions, listen, this is going to happen. The decision has been made for you, and we need to find a way to get through this together, such as loading when there's no other option, such as walking away from the herd when they have to, such as getting medical care when it's necessary, such as standing still when that's necessary. There are many things I do with my horses where the decision has been made for them. That's part of the responsibility of domestication. However, I think there's also a line to draw in the sand between the responsibilities of domestication and the responsibilities of safe caring, and applying the same attitude to a tempi change and the same attitude to a piaf. I don't think it's fair to say to a horse, listen, this piaf has been decided for you. You now need to figure out a way to do it. It's been decided for you. And if you don't, well, what happens when they don't? That's the question we're here to answer. What do you do when they don't? And I think that really matters. So what started all of this for me? Many years ago when I was still working in the public, not in the centre, so I was never in the mainstream public, but I was working in the public with horses, I started noticing something that was really curious to me. I started noticing that the horses that I trusted the most weren't the horses that always said yes. They were the horses that knew how and when to say no. And then they also knew how to come back and try really hard, even when it was difficult for them. Those horses I trusted the most, the horses who were discerning about the activities together with me without abandoning the connection. And that's become a very important distinction for me that I spend a lot of time teaching, because these horses were able to disagree, they were able to question, they were able to hesitate, but they stayed in the relationship, not because they were forced to, but because they were allowed to disagree, question, and hesitate. And what this did was cause the horses to want to stay in the relationship, and it caused them to feel more motivated to figure out why I was asking them to do something they didn't want to do. So when I would come to them with an injection, when I would come to them with a halter when they didn't want it, but we had a history together where they were allowed to disagree, question, and hesitate, these horses worked a lot harder to understand why I didn't give up and why I kept insisting in this moment. And those horses, almost every single time, would allow me to do necessary handling very, very safely. And there were very few situations where I was not able to get force majeure handling accomplished with these horses. The horses where I was not able to get force majeure handling accomplished were the horses that were trained historically through obedience. Because the point is to remain in conversation with the horse, that the communication channel stays open. And when the communication channel stays open, nothing needs to become super dramatic between you and the horse. Think about the safest people in your life. Are they the people who never disagree with you? Maybe not. Maybe they're the people who can disagree with you calmly, safely, kindly. Because then at least you know where you stand. The relationship becomes real. And I think the same thing is true with horses. So let's imagine a horse is approaching a trailer or a horse float or a horse truck, and the horse hesitates, like most horses do. A lot of folks will see that hesitation as a behavior problem. I don't. I see that hesitation as the solution and as necessary and as part of the robustness of the relationship. It is information from the horse. The horse is saying something to us with hesitation. Now, can we investigate that hesitation? Is the horse confused? Are they physically uncomfortable? Are they frightened? Are they footsore, unsure about the footing, about the light? Are they unsure about the destination? Because last time they got on a trailer, they popped out the other end and they didn't have a good time. Or are they unsure about who's handling them right now? That hesitation is very useful because it allows me to start investigating what exactly the problem is. Then I can go through the Rolodex of what the potential problems are with that hesitation and try to provide some solutions. So, for example, if they're physically uncomfortable, I should be exploring analgesics in situations where trailering is no other option. If they're frightened, we need to slow it down, and we need to let them take their time. Or in a situation of force majeure with a frightened horse, you need to use medical grade support to help that horse feel calm enough to get in a situation of force majeure. And I'm talking fire on the hillside. If that horse is physically sore with their feet, for example, could you put some boots on them, or could you give them some butte for a moment? If they're unsure about the footing, are you able to fix it? Is it a color problem about the ramp into the trailer, for example? If they're unsure about the destination and you don't have to trailer today, maybe you've got some work to do. Maybe you've got some work to do with this horse to prepare them for the situation. See, the hesitation gives us something to work with, something more to work with than just get in because I said so and I can't be bothered with you. Because if our only goal is getting the horse loaded, then the hesitation becomes something we want to eliminate. Only eliminate without curiosity. And the horse learns that they shouldn't tell us what they think. And when that lesson gets repeated over and over again, and again and again, the horse stops telling us what they think. And for me, I don't want to ride or train or handle a large herbivorous flight animal with rocks for feet that has learned that they cannot tell us what's wrong. I don't want to handle them because eventually that animal has no other choice. When the horse stops telling us what's wrong, I've seen people celebrate that moment, but I don't, because silence is not always agreement. Sometimes silence is a resignation. And you and I know that they're very different things. And this is one of the reasons why I care so much about consent, and that's a placeholder. That is a placeholder word. Consent is a placeholder word. We need to find a better word there. And when we're talking about it semantically, but let's just say consent for now, because consent is morally fashionable and it brings up also unnecessary transfer arguments between the horse and human world, and that gets very muddy very quickly. However, I still care very much about consent, about questioning, do I have access, do I have permission? Consent, for want of a better term, creates information. The horse who can decline is able to tell you something. The horse who can dissent can tell you something. The horse who can express uncertainty tells you something. A more informed horse person is going to be a safer horse person. Lack of information makes us less safe, I think, almost in every situation. This is true in other domains, such as public aviation, medicine, human relationships. More information makes us more safe. And it's also true in horsemanship. The more accurate the information you have, the better your decisions become. The horse who can communicate clearly becomes easier to understand. And easier to understand horses become safer horses. Now, before someone misunderstands me, this does not mean horses get to do whatever they want, whenever they want. I can already hear someone listening, thinking to themselves, so the horse just gets to vote now. Well, yes and no. Life doesn't work on one-way streets. Partnership doesn't function on a one-way street. There are still things that need doing. Veterinary procedures, emergency situations, emergency transports, boundaries, responsibilities. The question isn't whether boundaries exist. The question is how they are created and maintained, and whether the horse has any meaningful way to participate in them, because there's a huge difference between you have no choice and I understand this isn't your favorite thing, but the decision has been made, and let's figure out how to do it together. Those two experiences feel very different to the horse, and they produce very different horses over time, even if the mechanics aesthetically look similar. So one of the most useful things you might want to teach your horse is an alternative. So instead of saying to a horse, don't do that, try what can you do. It means you're not going to get exactly what you want, but you allow the horse to try something and you accept what they offer. So instead of punishing the horse's movement and attempt, you shape their attempt. Instead of suppressing communication, you direct and foster communication. Instead of eliminating dissent, you teach productive dissent, safe dissent. The horse learns, I can express myself and stay connected to this person, and that makes them amazingly safe. The irony is that giving horses more options often makes them easier to work with, not harder, because cooperation becomes then available. The horse no longer needs to choose between obedience or rebellion. The horse can participate with us. Participation, totally different physiological state. You and I can feel it. The horse can feel it. We all feel it immediately. complying, or contributing. I think most of us know which we'd rather spend time with. So in summary, what's the most dangerous thing you can teach a horse? That they have no other options almost all the time. Because eventually, every horse finds an option or creates one. The question is whether they find it early, safely, and inside the communication with us, or late, explosively, and without us. And I'd much rather teach a horse how to say no with us rather than no against us, and teach them how to come back. The safest horse in the world isn't the horse who never disagrees. The safest horse in the world is the one who knows how to disagree safely and knows that someone is listening. Speaking of which, thank you for listening. I appreciate you, and I hope you're well, and I will see you next time.
If you would like to support this podcast, a simple way to do that is by leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. It will help more people to find these conversations, and it would mean a lot to me. Horse First with Lockie Phillips is distributed by the Believe Audio and Video Network. And just a gentle reminder, the content of this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and are not a substitute for professional, veterinary, or medical advice. I'm Lockie Phillips. Thank you for being here.